Hello, and welcome to the first RevThem Rule of Law podcast of 2023. My name is Oliver Garner. I'm delighted to welcome Anna Wojcik to the podcast today. Anna is an assistant professor at the Institute of Law Studies of the Polish Academy of Sciences, and she has also co-founded two rule of law monitoring projects in Poland. Today, we will discuss the latest season opening of Poland's rule of law drama in 2023. Anna, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for the invitation. Good afternoon.
We had a busy season finale to 2022 within Poland, with the controversial Justice Minister Zbigniew Ziobro surviving a no-confidence vote. 2023 has also opened with further parliamentary drama regarding a new bill concerning the controversial judicial reforms in the country. Could you provide an overview of the constitutional and political intrigue in Poland for our listeners?
Yes, I would be delighted to. So let's move to mid-December, when Justice Minister Zbigniew Ziobro survived a yet another vote of no confidence. Actually, we may say that in Poland, the opposition is routinely requesting such a vote on the fate of the minister who is responsible for the rule of law backsliding in Poland. And the previous vote over such motion was in May 2022. However, this December vote was exceptional because it was not as certain as it used to be that Ziobro would keep his position. It was a big test for the ruling coalition that has been greatly preoccupied with infighting since winning the second term in 2019. So just to recap to the listeners, since 2015, Poland has been governed by a coalition government named United Right that has included three parties: the right-wing Law and Justice, PIS, led by Jarosław Kaczyński, an increasingly extreme right-wing party Solidarna Polska, led by Ziobro, and a so-called Tory party Porozumienie, led by a former deputy prime minister Jarosław Gowin, who quit in 2021 or was kicked out over his criticism of the planned tax reform and also of his criticism of the ghost presidential election for which PiS pushed in spring 2020 during the first dramatic months of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So just to show you the numbers, the United Right has 228 MPs. The chamber consists of 460 deputies. So they don't have absolute majority. But of course, they can still pass the bills because they persuade missing MPs from other smaller parties. And among those 228, 17 are Solidarna Polska MEPs. So they are really crucial. And over the years, Solidarna Polska wanted to distinguish themselves from PIS. So they became increasingly radical, Eurosceptic, Germanophobic, socially conservative. They are anti-EU Green New Deal. They have waged this anti-LGBT rights crusade. They supported restrictions to abortion law, etc., etc. And importantly, they have also challenged, both in rhetorics but also with legal motions, the case law of the EU Court of Justice and of the European Court of Human Rights. So Ziobro does it as the Prosecutor General. And against this background, this introduction, we also need to see that Jarosław Kaczyński is already 73 years old. And we have a situation straight out of the succession series. So we have a competition, who would be the next successor. And we have four contenders. So MP Morawiecki, Justice Minister Ziobro, Defense Minister Błaszczak, who was a very loyal but not very charismatic person, and President Duda. So we see that today Polish politics and also the rule of law issue is hostage to this situation, to the competition between them. Mm-hmm. And in recent months, we've seen that actually Solidarna Polska has been accusing Prime Minister Morawiecki of treason for accepting certain EU policies, Fit for 55, conditionality regulation, then Next Generation EU, and the milestones, the rule of law milestones in the Polish recovery plan. So they are accusing PIS of being too centrist, and they present themselves as the true radicals. And it leads to, I would say, a very specific situation where they are actually criticizing each other more than the opposition. Mm. There's always been this tension, but the situation is so toxic that that even Prime Minister didn't support one of the bills that were favored and presented by Jobro. But PAS has to show a united front and has kept Jobro as Justice Minister.
Well, thank you for that overview and that fascinating insight into the infighting that's happening within the ruling coalition. And for those listeners who might not be as familiar with Polish politics, does this calling of a no-confidence vote and the repeated no-confidence votes in Ziobro indicate a broader dissatisfaction among parliamentarians with the government's programme on the rule of law? Or do you think the issue was related more to his personality as Justice Minister?
Well, he has quite a standoffish personality, that's for sure. But I would say that today everyone is dissatisfied with his change into judiciary, not only the European Commission, but it's being openly criticized not only by the opposition in Poland, but by PIS, by Kaczyński, by Morawiecki, who is criticizing it as failing to, for instance, meet the goal of making the proceedings faster. And the Prime Minister complained that the digitization in other areas, for instance, in healthcare, happened much faster. It was much better. So we also see that PIS leadership is criticizing the changes for not fulfilling the official ones, the official goals, but also the unofficial ones, which is the fact that still the majority of judges in Poland are independent, they are not subordinated, and they are winning cases before European Court of Human Rights, and also the Commission is winning cases before the EU Court of Justice. And I would say that in 2022, the EU institutions found new energy to push for the rule of law compliance in member states. So against this this whole process, the Polish government increasingly sees that it's just too costly to keep this reform. And this reform costs at the moment 36 billion euros that are frozen. This is the money from the Polish recovery fund, but also it costs this daily penalty of 1 million euros for not complying with the ECJ order in a case, the still pending case regarding the muzzle law. And this is already 442 million euros. So we see that the Polish voters are also really worried about this prolonged negotiation with the European Commission. PIS is unable to make a compromise within the party, but also to convince the president to make necessary changes. However, PIS leadership is already campaigning, and during the tours of the country, Kaczyński is still promising further changes into judiciary. So he said, I quote, "The court reform is absolutely necessary. What is happening in the courts today is one gigantic scandal. There is systemic inequality before the law. This needs to be changed, but it is difficult in the current political climate." So basically, he implies that the courts are part of this liberal entanglement of powers and that they rule more leniently in cases regarding celebrities, for instance, of politicians, of people close to the liberal leftist elites. So, but the situation is really difficult for the government because the elections are coming this autumn, and the European Union enjoys 2.5 times more trust than the Polish state authorities, according to the latest Eurobarometer. And Poles are really worried that the government stopped delivering. So they worry about the cost of living crisis. In December, inflation was 70.5% month to month. And of course, people worry about security. So without unblocking the recovery fund, PIS is also, I think, convinced, increasingly convinced and panicked that the opposition will spin this narrative and convince Poles that other EU funds will be suspended, such as cohesion funds in the case of Hungary. So what is happening in Hungary and all this EU pressure, increased pressure and consistency, is also really impacting on the public opinion here in Poland. So if we look at the polls, PIS has lost several percentage points since winning elections in 2019, but then the situation was completely different. It was like a peaceful, prosperous moment of Polish history. And back then they had they got 43% of votes, and now they poll around 30, max 35%. So this is a very fluctuating, of course, result. And the situation actually maybe is not that terrible for them. I mean, on the other hand, because the winter is warm and the days will get longer and Polish people will get more optimistic, especially that economic forecasts are, you know, not great, but also not terrible. So PIS is also really actively recruiting its core voters, and the core voters are pensioners, retired people. So they already promised big social transfers and other measures that will happen accidentally just before the election, such as granting pensioners the 13th, the 14th, and maybe even the 15th pension. So this is straight out of Orbán's playbook in Hungary. So I would say that, that this is a situation that for them is quite difficult, but I wouldn't say that they are completely without standing a chance during that election.
I think our listeners will be fascinated to hear about the political contestation that is happening within Poland, not only amongst governmental actors and parliamentary actors, but also amongst the population. And to go on to that topic of the rule of law tension between the EU and Poland. Since summer 2022, we have seen, let's say, some changes to the situation, such as the removal of disciplinary chambers in Polish courts. Yet new similar bodies seem to have been established, called the Chamber of Professional Responsibility, to spring up in the place to replace these disciplinary chambers. So do you think the risk arises that the Polish government might abandon its policy of open confrontation with international institutions in exchange for a more insidious approach, more informal, maybe, you know, behind the scenes, akin to that pursued by Hungary?
Yes, the Polish government can't afford to lose the recovery funds billions, and also it can't afford to lose the face of not being able to make a deal with the European institutions. So at the moment, we've seen many changes that are indicative of the, of that. So first, the Constitutional Tribunal is not ruling on motions that were brought by Prosecutor General Ziobro, so there will be no further antagonism from the part of the Polish leadership abusing the Constitutional Court. Second, the European Affairs Minister was changed, and the new one is quite friendly with Commissioner Reinders. He makes, as we've heard, better impression, and basically his proposals are supposedly more constructive. So there are, of course, rumors that were actually confirmed in parts also by European institutions that a sort of a deal was struck in Brussels. And that creates a big opposition, internal opposition in Poland, of course, from the justice minister, who is opposing the Brussels diktat and writing Polish laws, the law on the Supreme Court and other acts in Brussels. But a couple of hours ago, in the early hours of today, the parliamentarians stopped working in the commissions on a draft project that was first presented mid-December. And this project entails, among other things, that this Chamber of Professional Liability will not consider disciplinary cases of judges, that these cases will be considered by the Supreme Administrative Court. That is quite a bizarre situation, to be honest, because Supreme Administrative Court is constitutionally tasked with considering cases related to actions of public administration and not disciplinary cases of judges. So yesterday in Sejm, the president of the Supreme Administrative Court raised objections to the proposed solutions. And he said that, of course, in addition to those constitutional concerns, he also listed difficulties such as the small number of the judges of the court, short timeframes for dealing with cases assigned to them, the issues regarding the draw of judges for adjudication, and that the vacatio legis would be too short. So there were, there's a lot of objection. Also, the Supreme Court objected, the National Council for Judiciary objected, and we see that the Justice Ministry objects to that. But PiS managed to convince also parts of the opposition that they should proceed and work on this proposal. However, civil society considers that the proposal is not meeting the milestones and is not implementing judgments of the European Court of Human Rights and the EU Court of Justice. So, in particular, the bill does not repeal the provisions of the so-called Muzzle Law, Muzzle Act, adopted in February 20. It was adopted before, but it went entered in force on the Valentine's Day of February 2020. And this bill prohibited under disciplinary penalty, among other things, to question the status of a judge. And at the moment, we have this big debate within Poland because judges are using the case law of the ECJ and to ECHR to question the fact, the appointment of proper appointment and independence of people who were either appointed or promoted during the term of new National Council of Judiciary that were selected on rules that were changed by PIS. Mm-hmm. And this body is the heart of the problem with this whole rule of law crisis in the judiciary dimension. So we see that there is a really big push from the Law and Justice to finalize this bill. However, the biggest obstacle is actually their friend. It's President Duda, who announced that he would veto any bill that would cast doubt over his constitutional competence to appoint judges. Mm-hmm. So he is really worried about any phrasing that he sees as potentially curtailing this competence. And there are many venues where actually Prime Minister Morawiecki and President Duda may go to and speak about such matters as, you know, not vetoing this bill, but they also probably talked during the funeral of the former Pope Benedict XVI in Rome. So perhaps there is also this Italian dimension of the Polish rule of law saga here in this telenovela. And we don't know the outcome yet, but definitely this is something that will play out in the coming weeks.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that sobering analysis of plenty of complications that may still stand in the way of a pathway to resolution, despite the political will that may be there now. We've briefly discussed Hungary in one or two of your answers. And before Christmas, we saw the first steps being taken towards the budget conditionality regulation of the EU being activated against Orbán's regime. How do you think Poland would react to such a development? Would we see the wedge that was driven between the two countries by Orbán's policy on the Ukrainian war continue and deepen? Or could the shared economic interests of both countries' governments drive these liberal partners back together?
Well, maybe the first comment would be on the shared economic interests. So actually, Poles and Hungarians are considered close friends. We are friends because we don't share the border, so we are perfect neighbors. But also, if you look at the trade balances between the two countries, I mean, we are not that interconnected. So there was always this, I would say, transactional, ideological friendship that played out and steered the European Union. However, in practice, I would say that Warsaw at the moment wants to decouple from Budapest because Orbán's brand of doing politics, of basically saying that Hungary's geopolitical, security, economic interest lays somewhere else than Poland's and the rest of the European Union's, concerning Russia and Ukraine. Well, this is something that is very well known by voters in Poland, and this is something that the Polish government and the opposition as well cannot, you know, cannot stick to. Mm. And that, of course, don't want to. So I would say that Poland showed that it's ready to sacrifice friendship with Orbán and basically also supported starting the conditionality regulation against Hungary. Mm-hmm. So we've seen the end of this famous friendship, at least for a moment. And some people consider that perhaps if Morawiecki stays as the prime minister, we will seek more rapprochement with Italy under Meloni. So I see that the law and justice needs to recalibrate its European policy a little bit, and it seeks allies where they can find them. So at the moment, there is this, I would say, strong strong interest into supporting Ukraine, into fighting with the cost of living crisis, at the same time trying to improve the Polish military. There is a lot of uncertainty regarding these areas, and in this respect, what happens with Hungary is, I would say, not Warsaw's business anymore. So of course this may very quickly change if the Polish recovery plan is accepted and the funds are transferred, and also maybe if the funds are not transferred in April, we'll see that the Polish and Hungarian governments are coordinating their positions regarding EU again, regarding the recovery money, because at the end of March, the deadline passes for implementing the milestones in the Hungarian recovery plan. So perhaps then we will see some changes. But at the moment, Poles are preoccupied with the Polish situation and Ukraine in general.
Well, we've seen how the Ukraine conflict has really shifted the tectonic plates geopolitically around the world, and it seems also to be the case in the EU's values crisis. And looking ahead to another point which could really be a volta in the story, and the parliamentary elections in Poland in autumn 2023, do you believe that rule of law issues will play a salient role, or will these issues be overshadowed by the more immediate existential problems of potential economic turmoil and war on Poland's doorstep? And finally, do you believe there is any threat that the elections won't take place on an even footing for the opposition, as has been claimed was the case in Hungary's elections last year?
Yes, I will actually reply by quoting a very good analyst, Jakub Majmurek, who published a really good analysis of the voters' concerns before the elections, how they perceive elections. So he referred to the image of a duck and a rabbit. There is this image that, depending who you are, I mean, what your associations are, you see either a duck or a rabbit. And this is what Polish voters see, because some of them see the elections as this existential issue. So they see it, if they are supportive of PIS, they see it as a decisive moment for, I would say, guaranteeing this third decisive term. And they also fear the forces of globalization, imposing rights, imposing European Union's values, especially anti-discrimination law on them, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas people who consider that we've been through the constitutional erosion and that we are basically living in the dictatorship under Jarosław Kaczyński, for them this is also an existential elections. But for many voters, as in many countries, who are not following politics that much or are not that emotional, to them that would be like reasonably fair and normal election. So their expectations are, I would say, not as grand. They just expect some policy proposals. And of course, Poles know that PIS has guaranteed that the level playing field is heavily tilted towards them. For instance, they have a very powerful public media that have been made infamously into government propaganda machine. Plus, there are several issues that play to their advantage, and such as, of course, the geopolitical situation, security concerns, this effect of like to rally around the flag, etc. But on the other hand, PIS has already announced certain changes that are difficult to criticize, such as increasing the number of electoral commissions, so that polling stations, so that people who live in rural areas, they don't have to travel to other cities or towns, but they have the polling station close by. And this is, of course, a very happy coincidence for PIS, because it just happens that most of the voters, or a significant part of the voters, live in the countryside and are elderly people. Yes. So I would say that according to polls, 50% considers that there might be problems with the election fairness. We've actually had problems with election fairness in the Polish presidential election of 2020, where other candidates couldn't campaign on par with the incumbent Duda. So polls are, I would say, quite worried, but the level of their anxiety is also very much correlated with their, compared to Western Europe, in countries such as Poland, still the participation is not that high. So the turnout in last elections was around 60%. And that would be a major success, you know, if it was sustained. So now parties are trying really hard to mobilize their voters. But the mood in the country is, I would say, quite gloomy. So this is also something that is really not pushing the participation forward. Well, we'll be closely monitoring what's happening. And I'm also sure that external observers, also at CU Democracy Institute, will monitor and comment on this very eventful year.
Well, thank you so much, Anna, for that overview of the situation as we start 2023. And as you said, it would be fantastic to continue our collaboration on both the rule of law and the democratic issues leading up to the elections in the autumn. I'd encourage our listeners to follow us on social media, on Twitter, LinkedIn and Facebook, and also to subscribe to the podcast on Spotify. Thank you so much again, Anna, and good luck for your own work in 2023.
Thank you very much.